Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
The Last Dance finally came to an end last night. Episodes 9 and 10, just a great couple of months, a great couple of months worth of Sundays. I'm not kidding, guys. I'm genuinely disappointed that it's over. I know that the 10 episodes is an incredibly generous gift to have given all of us, but I could have used more. I really got into the habit of Sunday at 6 o'clock turning on that TV and being ready to go.
You can still do it because now we've got Lance Armstrong coming on.
Lance.
After Lance, we got Bruce Lee. I'm not saying it's the same thing as The Last Dance, but in terms of opportunities to see backstories that you didn't know, get to see maybe some behind
the scenes. Yeah, I'll go back to 285 ID Network.
I'm pretty good with that. And the other thing, too, is that I don't believe, I haven't done all the research, but I don't believe Lance Armstrong was intimately involved in the production of this. In terms of green lighting, what was used and what wasn't used. So you might get some more scandalous stuff that came out as well.
That's coming up next Sunday. We finished up The Last Dance last night, 10-part docuseries that was amazing, going through all of Michael Jordan's 6 championships. Joining us right now is somebody that was involved in one of those championships on the wrong end with Seattle, George Karl, joining us here on the Sprint People's Hotline. George, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Very well. Doing well. I'm glad The Last Dance had a celebration last night, and the sun's shining, and it looks like the golf course can handle me a little bit.
Let's jump right in, Coach. Yes. I want to know what was going through you guys' mind as a coaching staff when you played against the Bulls in the championship in electric to not, for those first couple games, to not have GP on Michael Jordan. What was that? Take me through that process.
Well, there's a lot to it. One, the strategy, I don't know if you remember my Seattle teams, but we switched a lot and we double-teamed a lot and we scrambled a lot. So, you know, the first thing is you talk about the other team's personality and the personnel they have. Michael's number one, so there's a lot of guys on our team that had to cover him, you know, from big guys on pick and rolls to double team situations. So, and the other thing was Nate McMillan was hurt. He did not play game 1, 2, and 3, and I did not have a backup point guard. So going to Chicago, and back then Michael was still getting to the free throw line, and I, you know, the last thing I wanted was Gary Payton to get in foul trouble. And then I think the last thing that no one really knows about, because we kept it pretty private, was Gary had a lower calf bruise, and he was not totally 100%. So what we decided was that Gary at the game, you know, we're going to play you late on him and late in the series, and plus you'll be on him a lot when you switch on to him and like that. The thing we lost with Gary not on him early in the series was Gary had an edge in game 4 and game 5. And we could have used that psychological intensity that Gary brought to our team probably earlier in the series and maybe won a game. And if we would have won one of the games in the first 3, I think the series would have had a different rhythm. It might have been the same result, but I think the series itself would have had a different momentum swings and a different rhythm to it.
Coach, you know, I actually really remember the fact about Nate McMillan not being injured or being injured, but when he did play, you guys were victorious. But there were other aspects to the series too that I thought was quite interesting, beginning with you not greeting Michael Jordan and him viewing that as a slight that motivated him. I understand the reports are is that you've been told that Mike likes to play head games and that you didn't want to go to him because you were afraid of the head games. But in retrospect, it looks like you were in a no-win situation.
Right. There's no question. It's 24 years ago, so I don't exactly remember the scenario. But I did talk, I mean, we had on our staff Brendan Malone, who's the assistant coach for the Detroit Pistons. And he was the guy that told us that Michael likes to play head games, likes to use circumstances, quotes, situations to his advantage to make the series more personal. And so he recommended me that I would go to Sam Perkins and a couple other guys on my team that had good relationships with Michael and told him that there'd be no fraternizing, no socializing, no going out to dinner with him, no being buddy-buddy with him. And so when I see him in this restaurant, you know, it's kind of my idea was, one, do I go over and say hello and be a good North Carolina, you know, fraternity guy? Or do I stay with my team with the code that we set down? And I chose the latter. And then also, I don't remember exactly the situation, but Michael could have come to me, too. You know, I know everybody expects me, I should go to Michael, but Michael and I are Tar Heel guys, and we're both, I think Michael's the greatest competitor that I've ever competed against. But I look at myself as a pretty damn good competitor, too, so... You know, and people can, you know, observe it, read it, interpret it in whatever way they want. I really think it's something that's being magnified and blown out of proportion a little bit. And, you know, and right now we probably need things that kind of spike our interest in sports.
George Carl joining us here on the morning show on the Sprint People's Hotline. George, like you mentioned, it was 24 years ago. When you got a chance to see this, were you kind of reliving it like, oh, maybe I should have tried this or maybe I should have tried that? Or are you just kind of taking it in the way that a lot of us are, just kind of reminiscing about the NBA in the 80s and 90s?
I think as coaches, you're always second guessing. You know, in this pandemic that we're in, I've gone back and looked at a lot of my playoff games, and you know, a couple of my assistant coaches have zoomed with each other, and we actually went back and watched Golden State when I was at Golden State against Utah. And we watched Charlotte and Milwaukee and Philadelphia. So I've been watching a lot of playoff games, and I look at some of the games and I go, wow, I wasn't very good in that game. I mean, I couldn't get my team playing well. Our defense sucked. And so, yeah, I think, you know, you go back and look at games. And the Chicago series, when we looked at that game, the thing we would really like to have had is a healthy Nate McMillan. Because Nate played in game 4 and played in game 5. Did not play that well. But what I saw was Gary was the heart of our team, and Nate was the soul of our team. And by soul, he was the guy that held us together, brought confidence to the table, did the little things that coaches love, and he had a way of kind of spiking Sean and Gary to play at a higher level. And so, yeah. I'm not saying we would have won the series, but I think if Nate McMillan would have been healthy and we would have our full rotation that we had most of the season, I think it would have probably been a little different series.
Having watched The Last Dance, Coach, and seeing all 10 episodes, what stood out to you the most?
You know, the thing that stands out the most to me was the calmness and the mindfulness and the zenfulness that Phil Jackson brought to that team was absolutely necessary. If you had a different type of coach that would have reacted maybe more emotionally, more radically, aggressively, you know, opinionate, you know, wanted his... I'm sure Phil didn't like what Jerry Krause was doing, but you never got the feeling that Phil Jackson was really into getting a revenge mentality going in that conversation. And I thought his calmness all the way through to the final where they had that ceremony in the locker room where they burn they write what they think of each other and then they burn it. Mm-hmm. I think that's a Native American kind of symbolism that I think Phil probably learned when he lived in Montana. And I just thought it was just really revealing that, you know, coaches, most coaches look like they're sometimes too opinionated, too emotional. Phil brought a calmness to that team that was absolutely necessary to handle Dennis Rodman, and absolutely necessary to handle a Pippen situation, absolutely necessary to handle the conflict between Jerry Krause. I mean, there are things there that would have torn most franchises apart, and maybe they would have won one or two, but they wouldn't have won six.
Mm-hmm. Coach, I can't help but think about, you know, after you leave Seattle, you have great teams in Milwaukee, you have great teams in Denver, but you weren't able to get back to the NBA Finals. Back in 96, did you think you'd be back?
The next year we had Sean Kemp have a contract situation that got the organization a little disruptive. And this is what I'm saying about organizations handling their problems. And after that year, Sean was always a really good player, but it seemed like it really bothered him. And then Wally Walker and I didn't get along very well. And that kind of bothered some of the players. It bothered some of the locker room. And it's not that we didn't play well. We still had good years the next year, next 2 years. But we never played at the highest peak that we could have played at. So, we went seven years in Seattle, winning 57 games. And we never got to the championship, basically, because we had Michael Jordan in our face all the time.
George Karl joining us here on the Sprint People's Hotline on Keyshawn, LZ, and Travis. And, you know, with like you said, Coach, you go back and you look at old games, you think about things you could have done differently. With the benefit of 24 years of hindsight and thinking about this, if you were going to design a game plan to beat a Michael Jordan team, what is it? Because 6-0 in the finals, once he got cooking, nobody figured out how to do that. What would you do if you could do it all over again?
The thing you got to realize from the very beginning, you know, we actually didn't do a bad job on Michael. We shot 41% against us. If we played him again, I would take 41% and not foul him as much. He got to the free throw line way, way too much in the first three or four games. And a lot of his points came from the free throw line. The one thing that no one talks about much is how great of a defensive team they were. And I would probably work on my offense more, on how to get, what was going to work. What matchups was better suited for us, and maybe rotate the game differently to get to those matchups. And maybe, for me, we didn't start Burkowski until game four also. I would have probably started my veteran guys more than playing young. And, that's a hard thing to really analyze right now, but those are the things. And then probably put Gary on Michael early in the series, and then pull him off him a little bit rather than not put him on him and put him on him late. I flip-flop it. Put him on early and maybe take him off as the series went on.
Do you think, Coach, that if the Bulls would have stayed together, that they would have ran it back for a seventh championship? Did they have that in them?
Well, I definitely think it's crazy to analyze that your team is too old before it might be too old. But I also think they were fatiguing. And they were in the last two championships against Utah. You can actually go back to the last four. I mean, the series against Phoenix, the series against us, and against Utah. I think that, you know, the winning four series is, was getting tired. They were getting tired in the fourth series. So I would probably say I think they deserve the right to try to do it, but I think they were running out of gas, and I think maybe someone would have caught them. Probably a team that would have been interesting to see that was catching them most was Indiana in the Eastern Conference.
I would have rather been caught, though.
Yeah, no question about it. 1,175 NBA wins as a head coach. George Karl joining us here on The Morning Show. George, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much.
Gentlemen, have a great day. Celebrate, right,
you too.
You too. Enjoy the golf course. All right, there's a whole bunch in there. Let's come back. Let's talk about some of the things that George mentioned there, particularly that he would have worked on his offense more going into that series and much less about trying to figure out what to do with Michael Jordan. That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. That was interesting, guys, having that conversation with George Karl there and listening to him kind of run back the job that he did in the finals and talking about some of the other playoff series that he was involved in as a head coach. And he would look at them and say, you know what? I did not do a very good job right there. I mean, like all of us, with the benefit of hindsight, you go back and say, yeah, you know what? Maybe I should have done something a little bit differently here. I was really caught by him saying that if we were going to play them again, I would focus more on my offense because we did a pretty good job on him defensively. We just needed to find a way to get some more buckets.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I understand what he's saying about the whole GP not being on him because Nate McMillan and all that, and he didn't want to tire him out. I get it. But, man, you shoot your best shot no matter what with your best guy. And, you know, coaches are never going to admit mistakes because that's just not in their nature. But clearly, as you saw, Gary Payton wasn't very happy with the situation of not being able to be a part of the defense to neutralize Michael Jordan, no matter what Michael felt.
That was the aspect of the conversation that – you know, the little details that sometimes get lost when you look back on championship runs and championship teams. You know, I remember Gary Payton's injury heading into the finals. And, you know, that being part of the process, his rationale. And it just goes to show you, whether you're talking 1996 with the Sonics or, you know, 2019 with the Golden State Warriors, you have to be lucky, too. Like, yeah. Being really good just isn't enough. You have to be lucky, and part of that luck is having good health, or at least decent enough health to finish the job. And it's just, you know, it just reminds me of just how precious these opportunities are. You know, you can see a great roster be constructed, but that doesn't mean they're going to finish the deal. And you need, you know, Lady Luck on your side and a good GM and excellent players to have a championship, let alone a run.
Yeah, I don't understand how Coach Karl think that in the last four championships, the Bulls are getting tired. I'm like, how do you get tired if you won four in a row? That don't even sound right. I don't understand how you look at a team and say, oh, they tired right now. Man, they ain't even going to be able to compete next year.
Like, well, maybe it's not like the actual physical exhaustion, but much more about just the attrition that goes along with playing that deep. Because you look at LeBron over the last, you know, his 8 years, you look at the Warriors, like you just mentioned, LZ, that it's just that this ebb and flow. Sometimes you're firing at a high level and sometimes the tank is just empty emotionally as much as anything else, not even necessarily physically.
But you wouldn't take appearing in an NBA final? You wouldn't take appearing in a deep run into the playoffs? That's my whole point is, even if you don't win it and you make a run at it, like when the Lakers made our run when we put the super team together, we was there, but we lost it. We put the super team together, but we was there. We was there with the super team. So it could have worked until Karl Malone got hurt.
I mean, think about the fact that, you know, even with LeBron James's 8 consecutive, you know, appearances in the finals, you know, that run was completely riddled with injuries. You know, Kevin Love and Kyrie didn't even play, you know, really in that first final appearance with the Cavs. And the fact that had he stayed in Miami, but then Chris Bosh went down unexpectedly with a blood clot situation. Like, there's so much luck involved in this.
There's no question, exactly. But it's hard to win a championship, man. It's hard. But
that's why.
I'd rather take my chance than to say, you know what, I ain't even going to try.
Oh, no, Key, that's exactly what I've been saying all morning. What you just said right there is, this is why I do not understand the Reinsdorf and the Kraus piece of this, because it is so hard. You need to have so much luck. You need to have all these things kind of break your way at certain moments. That and let's be honest, for the Bulls, for six of those eight seasons, stuff was breaking their way. Not that it was lucky, but they were relatively healthy. They had the right coach. They had the right star, the right start. They just said, okay, that's enough. That
and
you,
if you look
absolutely
at it,
roll it until it dies.
And if you think about it, you can't possibly convince me and sell me on the fact of you made more money in 98, I mean in 99, than you did in 98. You can't tell me that. Or in 2000. You can't tell me as a team owner you made more money in those 2 years than you did in 1998 when you was winning the championship. You can't tell me that.
Yeah.
So I don't understand how you arrived to, I don't want to do this.
I don't know. Well, I do think the conversation was
or better yet, LZ, to think that you're going to assemble a team to make a run again because these guys are getting older. So you're going to try to go young and think that you're going to win championships? Or did you just break this up, Jerry Krause? Did you just do this because you wanted to stick it to everybody?
No, I do sincerely believe that he was trying to avoid the fate that happened in the Boston Celtics by keeping Bird, McHale, and Parrish too long. And then the franchise is really stuck because instead of you deciding how to make moves, Father Time has been in this world. So I get that perspective. The thing that's really interesting, though, is that remember that 98-99 season was a 50-game season because of contract situations. Mm. And so you take 32 games off the schedule. All of a sudden now you got an old team, but they only have to play 50 games. Now, obviously, we didn't know that at the time.
But I was about to ask you that, LZ. I was about to say, in June of 1998, or better yet, it would be June of 97. In June of 97 or 98, they didn't know that the strike was taking place like that.
Right, right. That's what I'm saying. Like, in hindsight, yes, they were old, but having only to play 50 games and then go into the postseason would have been a benefit for them. Anybody been able to get that seven.
But what they old, they just won in six.
That's what I'm saying.
They didn't win in seven. They didn't win in seven with the last shot. They won in six.
This is the craziest part of all.
They sent a broke down Scottie Pippen to Houston, and then Houston ended up in Seattle, in Portland. So it was clear that, if nothing else, the number two guy was on a fast decline. That was clear.
He was, but this is the whole point of this, that we didn't know there was going to be 50 games. We didn't know what Scottie had left. We didn't know if Michael comes back and gets four in a row, what he feels like physically. I wanted to see it. All of these things to decide. I understand the instinct to try to protect long term. You guys have heard me say this over and over again. The hardest job I think that this any general manager is, how do I win right now and also not be leveraged to high hell coming 5 years from now? I need to be able to be good now and 5 years from now. It's a really tricky position to be in, and I get where Jerry Krause is going. But at the end of the day, if you've got the right mix, I'm going to keep making that team play until somebody gets us. Does Scotty break down? Maybe. Does Michael finally hit the wall after having to play so many games in so many periods of time? Maybe. You have to find
okay,
out.
And I'm
you
okay
can't
with
just hit the
all that. And I'm okay with all that. Let them break down. Go ahead, break down. All right, it's fine. Broke down. We got to move. We got to start over. But until that happens, I'm gonna keep riding it. The Lakers kept they keep riding it. They rode it to the end, till the wheels fell off, and then they put it in the shop, let it rebuild, and came right back with the diesel in them, and ran it to its course, and rebuilt with Powell, and ran it to its course, and now they rebuilding with LeBron and AD. That's the model to me. The model ain't win six. The model ain't win six, and then all of a sudden just hit the detonator.
No, I agree with you. But even with the 50-game season, this is just me. I think the Spurs would have got him regardless.
But how could you say that? Because
We'll never know.
How you going to say that? And they just won the championship.
And they had Michael Jordan. I mean,
they had Michael Jordan.
Only because the Spurs were so strong in the one area where the Bulls had been so weak. You got to remember, they had two Hall of Famers still balling at the center position, basically. Tim Duncan and David Robinson.
They could beat Utah.
And that historically had been the one spot.
Man, they couldn't beat Utah with Greg Ostertag. Stop.
Man, they lost. No, this is Duncan's second year, man. This is so first year Duncan, second year Chip. Come on now.
All right. Greg Ostertag. There's still a lot more there. There's about the snub in the restaurant and George Carl's side of that story. Plus, he mentioned that Phil Jackson was integral to that set. Is Phil getting enough credit through this whole thing? We'll do that next on the morning show on 710 ESPN.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
So our conversation with George Carl about 25 minutes or so ago was interesting because he went out of his way. And then obviously Phil Jackson comes through this documentary looking really good because it's a very Phil Jackson friendly show. And that Phil is always very measured and thoughtful and talking about it. He's had Dennis's side. He had Scotty's side. Of course, he had Michael's side. He did not take a bunch of cheap shots at Jerry Krause. So he comes out of this thing looking really well. But do we give him enough credit for not just, you know, the X's and O's and all the things that he obviously has to do as a head coach, but for managing that circus for as long as he did, especially the second three-peat with Dennis Rodman? Because we saw it last night. In the middle of the finals, Dennis goes to hang out with Hulk Hogan and wrestle.
Jesus. Right? I mean, like, but you got to be able as a head coach, man, you got to be able to know your personnel. You got to know who you're dealing with. And that's anything. It's in relationships. You know, people say, oh, man, I didn't know that. When you bought that in the store, did you read the ingredients and the instructions on the back of the box? And that's the thing. It's like, oh, I just bought it. Well, he knew the ingredients and he knew the instructions and how to follow them. And he understood exactly who Dennis was. So he knew all along, well, Dennis may at some point disappear on us for a few days. You understand that text, right? And they sat there and they strategized. Yeah, if he leaves, you know, he's only going to be gone for a few days. So it wasn't, I'm not going to punish Dennis. I'm not going to make him run the bleachers or stairs. I'm not going to fine him. I'm not going to do anything to tick him off. Because what we're trying to do here is our ultimate goal is win a championship. And he's going to help us do that. So as you could tell, when they got back together, they said what they needed to say. Hey, break on three and go on. You big guys go over there, little guys over here. And they kept it moving. Wasn't no scalding of Dennis. Wasn't no nothing. Even Michael Jordan didn't even chime in, if you noticed. He chimed in the first time Dennis needed a vacation to Vegas. But he didn't chime in this time. He didn't say nothing. MJ gave no commentary on Dennis Rodman going. And where was the WWE at anyway?
It was in Michigan.
He had no plans to have a conversation on camera about Dennis Rodman going to Detroit.
But your point's a good one, but it's one thing to understand that to intellectually say, okay, I'm getting Dennis Rodman. I know what that means. He's unpredictable. He's unreliable when it comes to things that aren't games. And you kind of have an idea of what Dennis is. And then there's the reality of, wait a second, we're in the middle of the damn finals and he's not here? Where is he? He's wrestling with Hulk. Wait, what? To not react negatively to that, even if intellectually you knew what you were getting into, when it actually happens, like I can prepare to be reasonable and calm, and then something happens that just blows my mind because him going to Vegas for a couple of days, okay, whatever.
Now, look, you and I probably will react a certain way, but it's not like all of a sudden he getting ready to, in midair, turn the plane around and come, oh, you're right, coach, I made a mistake. And turned the plane around. They probably didn't even know till they saw it on highlights. It was like, that's where he went?
But that's what I mean. So when he comes back, the line he had last night when they said, you know, is this causing a distraction? And Phil looks at the reporter and says, it's not a distraction for us. It's a distraction for you. It's
because they already knew. Because they already knew what they were dealing with. So for them, it's like, come on, man. And I'm sure there's a bunch of stuff that has come up with Dennis along the way that they just was like, all right, man, come on. We know what that is. Where the media want to sensationalize it because it's a story, and they want to take it and drag it and ask you 150 times, what? It is a distraction. It is a scene. And he's like, no, we cool. We just playing basketball.
All you need to know really about Phil Jackson's legacy is that there are some all-time greats who ESPN has listed in the top 10 greatest players of all time who couldn't win a chip until Phil showed up.
Mm-hmm.
But remember when I just talked about the Spurs in 99. They swept Kobe and Shaq on their way to their first championship before Phil got there. How the hell you sweep Kobe and Shaq?
Ask like, Dale Harris.
Like so, and think about like Michael Jordan before Phil, you know, arrived. They had, you know, Jordan rules, but even before Jordan rules, Jordan suffered many seasons before even getting 500. So when you talk about the influence of a coach, and you talk about what Phil Jackson brought to the table, he brought more than just philosophies and understanding. He brought championship mentality. He taught some of the greatest players to ever pick up the basketball, Shaq, Kobe, Pip, MJ, how to win.
Well, and with Michael in particular, and look, I'll be honest. The whole Zen thing that Phil was putting out there for a long time, I always thought there was a bit of a put on with that, that it was good marketing. It was a good angle to take because he was the guy that was doing it a little bit differently than everybody else. But watching the way that those Bulls players reacted to him, watching the way that he could – and you heard Michael say it at the very end last night that – Phil had an unbelievable gift to get everybody to buy into the process, including Michael Jordan. If you can get Michael Jordan to buy into your program and everyone else is a part of that, that is true genius. To get the most competitive, ruthless, brutal guy and to be able to go to him and say, hey, you need to back off on this guy. We need you to do a little bit more of this. We need you to involve your teammates. And to get that kind of listen in that moment, it's extraordinary.
Well, what happens is, though, I mean, Travis, is coaches that got skin on the walls, they can get you to do a whole lot of things. You ain't got no skin on the wall, man. Don't come telling me nothing. Okay? When you keep preaching the same thing, because eventually that noise gets drowned out. We get tired of hearing the same thing. But if you winning and you've won championships, it's easier. And yet, like, Michael Jordan did not want Phil Jackson in the beginning. I don't know if you remember that or not.
Right, sure.
And, but once you start winning, it's like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I see what he's talking about. Then I'll do it that way. Then I'll be able to do this, and I can get a chip. Cool, no problem. But when it's not working, it's like, get out of here. You know, Larry Brown. Don't nobody want to hear all that old school noise. You know, if Larry Brown was putting up chips every other day, maybe people would line up. You wouldn't have heard the AI say practice. AI would have been like, man, cool. We just won 3 championships. I ain't got no problem. Where I need to go to practice at? But when you are hearing the same thing over and over and it's repetitive over and over and it's no results in the end that you're looking for, nobody's going to listen.
That's what good teachers do, though. Good teachers, really good teachers, knows which students you can chastise in the classroom, which ones you wait until after class is over to talk to, which ones may need you to call their parents, which ones you just need to give a look to. A really good teacher understands that every student doesn't take direction in the same way. And that was perhaps Phil Jackson's greatest gift, recognizing that you can have a team with a singular focus, but they all can't become focused in the same manner.
Glad you weren't my teacher calling my parents, LZ.
Think about it, though, that he got Michael Jordan to buy into a, hey, why don't you come in here and write down your thoughts to what this ride has been like, and then we'll burn it in a coffee can in the locker room. I mean, can you imagine the magnitude of eye rolling that would go on if somebody tried to do something like that with players right now, unless you had to buy in from the best guy?
But if you got 6 championships,
you're going to respect that coach, man. If that coach helped you get three championships, two championships, he got six, you're going to, if he says, hey, I want everybody to come in here and I want you to do it like this, you're going to listen to that. In this day and age, they're listening to Steve Kerr. They're going to listen to Steve Kerr. It's very, they're going to listen to Greg Popovich if Greg Popovich wasn't the type of coach that always rubbed people the wrong way. Tony Parker and them listens to him, and Tim Duncan, they're cool with him, but I'm sure, Bruce Bowen, but I'm sure there's other guys that's like, man, I don't want to be around this dude because he rubs him the wrong way, much like LZ is saying. He doesn't understand as a teacher how to deal with every student differently. And when you can multitask and you build Parcells and you deal with Keyshawn different than you deal with Tony Romo or Jason Witten or Curtis Martin. We all are different and we respect that. But if you all try to, yeah, everybody's going to do it this way and we're going to play, it's like, man, come on, man. I'm not doing that. I don't want to be. I do not want to come in and lift with the rest of the group because I don't want to be up in the offseason at 6 o'clock in the morning. Okay, well, as long as you get your work in at some point in time throughout the day, I'm okay with that. That is how you deal with people, to buy into your program.
All right, the flu game was not the flu game. Our world is shattered. That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. I'm thinking at least one prep day this week, guys, before Saturday, because Saturday is Ireland versus Travis Part 2. The loser gets double duty, two shows in one day. The winner gets a day off. It is this Saturday at Black Gold in Yorba Linda. Of course, Tiger and Phil is coming up on Sunday, but John and I will go first on Saturday. You can watch hole-by-hole coverage on the social media accounts at ESPN Los Angeles. And a big, big thanks to our friends at Travis Matthew. They're excited to introduce TM Rewards. That's their way of rewarding their customers for their loyalty, free shipping, and returns on all purchases. You can sign up right now at TravisMatthew.com today. So thanks to everybody for participating in that. Black Gold, Travis Matthew, and I'm looking to go 2-0, fellas.
Well, you take care of business. If you don't, then you got to come out and be my electrician and put all my wires back together at my house.
Yeah,
that is key for my television set.
I got to tell you, you just sent a picture of something on TV, and in the picture, you got a kind of a little bit of the surrounding area. You've got about 900 extension cords and connectors and a power strip. It looks like there's a modem in there or something. My visual of the Johnson household has been forever shattered. That's the messiest setup I've ever seen in my life.
Well,
disturbing. This is seriously upsetting.
Trust me, every day that I look at it, I think to myself the same thing both of you said. But the problem is it really got bad because of the Comrex, and I had to put everything and pull things out and do it. Just
that ain't
Asher, whatever.
What
you mean? All the wires are tucked underneath.
First of all, Travis, he's got an outdoor extension cord, the big one through his house. That's all. So I'm already like, he gave up. Like, he didn't even bother going to get like a brown one and try to blend it in. He just went out and got a lawnmower extension cord and just stuck it in his house.
I did. I went to the garage and got the big orange deal and plugged it in.
Plus, look at the trophy back there.
Well, the trophy was somewhere. That's Vance's basketball trophy. We just stuck it there.
And then the power strip is set up like it's a piece of sculpture or something. It's set up like it's artwork.
Man, when this is over with, all the wires will be tucked back underneath the way that they're supposed to.
Tell me if I'm wrong here. The reason that you haven't cleaned that up is because you're afraid you're not going to be able to put it back together if it comes unplugged, right?
No, but
if something comes loose, you're cooked.
You said me putting it. I'm not putting it back, and I didn't put it together, and I'm not putting it back.
That's my point.
So the whole point is I'll be calling Billy or Bobby or Jose or whoever they send over to tie the knots up the way they need to and tuck it right back underneath into the little thing so it's clean and simple. I just haven't. I gave up.
Hey, where you stay at, man? I'll go fix it.
I'm going further in, though, guys. I see Jen's purse just kind of hanging out next to the power strip.
No, but what you don't see is the hand decker
the vacuum. I can
see the vacuum.
I see the vacuum over there on the right side. Yeah, we got to put this up on social.
Put it up on social.
Oh my God.
So key. See, here's the thing, LZ. You tell me the second picture he sent that's a little more pulled back. There's a beautiful heart shaped vase on the table filled with beautiful roses. That's what I pictured Keyshawn's house looking like. Very orderly and tidy and beautiful. I didn't know you had a college dorm room in your living room with cords and vacuum cleaners set up.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, my internet works. I never go out. Unlike you and LZ, I have better internet in my household.
Well, you're not on the internet. You're plugged into the Comrex.
No, I'm plugged into the Comrex, but it has to go into my internet cables, right? I think that's the way it works.
Perhaps, but you're hardwired. We're wired.
You got all the cables plugged into your internet, for I can tell from this picture.
It's all made possible by that orange strip.
It is embarrassing to look at it, and I look at it every single day, and I'm like, man, it looks like I'm just living out of a box. Nice big TV. Then you get to the wires. They all over the place. But we got all sort of Apple TV connected, DirecTV. Then there's like a game where you stand in front and you step up and down on the game. I mean, it's all sorts of advanced stuff on this TV. So, you know, it is what it is, man.
Yeah, nice try.
I can still watch The Last Dance on it.
You did get to see The Last Dance. So it wasn't the flu game that we've known for 24 or 5 years that Michael Jordan had the flu, went out there, won the game anyway. It was the poisoned pizza game, which doesn't have nearly the poetic feel to it that the flu game does.
I know, but do you really think that somebody taminated?
Yes.
You really think that?
Yes. It happened to, Kobe or was it Shaq when they were in Sacramento? They got some bad food at one point. It was Kobe, right? Yeah, it happened.
Yep.
Look, I understand. I know getting bad food happens, but deliberately. Do you think somebody deliberately tainted and played with the food?
I do.
Wow. Really?
I don't think they deliberately did that. Because if they deliberately did that, please tell me Michael Jordan's people would have addressed that with a lawsuit. Like, please tell me.
But how could you ever prove that it was done intentionally? I mean, you know what I mean? It would be really, it's like, look, yeah, it came from us, but it was an accident. You know, the sausage, I guess, was bad or whatever was on it. I guess the pepperoni had spoiled. We had no idea. The only reason he was the only one that got it, it was late at night. We were getting ready to close. We threw one together at the last minute. I'm really, really sorry, guys. I know it came from me, but it was an accident. You could never prove it.
Or maybe it was just bad pepperoni or bad cheese that was old or something. Maybe that was the case. But I don't think anybody sprinkled any what was the white substance powder whatever it was called.
You're thinking like X-Lax or something like that?
Yeah, I'm sure. I don't think that they sprinkled any of that stuff on it. Eliminated. There's no way. I wouldn't go far to say that. I would just say it was food poisoning. But because they didn't identify it in the public as such that he was sick other than there was a temperature and he may have had flu-like symptoms at the time. Therefore, Jerry Sloan and the Utah Jazz really didn't know what it was, and the media didn't really know. He just used it as flu. Oh, yeah, because once Amari Rashad, poor Amari, once Amari Rashad.
I mean, damn. Can we just talk about this for a minute?
Like, is it that serious? I mean,
listen,
I got best friends in media, too, and I'm friends with players and everybody else, but I ain't swinging from a tree. It's not going to happen.
Look, I'm not fully blaming Amar with this because some of this is on NBC. After a certain point, you just got to know the person that you're putting on air is not a journalist. He's just his friend. And
well, hold on a second.
Wrong with that.
Did we ever think that Ahmad Rashad was a journalist? I never got the sense that Ahmad Rashad was a journalist. I thought he was a guy that had access to Michael Jordan and got to exploit that access.
He was put in positions.
Absolutely.
He was put in positions that made him appear as if he was a journalist. When you're doing sideline reporting, you're supposed to be doing sideline reporting. Reporting is
well. You are reporting. You're reporting on Michael Jordan.
No, you gossiping. If you that close and you talk about you sitting up before the game, yeah, dog, some people got this life, some people don't. Like, what the hell's going on here?
LZ, some people can and some people can't.
I was like, yeah, I was like, what the hell's going on?
But sideline reporting, you ain't got a business to be a reporter to sideline report. Eric Dickerson was a sideline reporter. He wasn't no journalist. I mean, Booger McFarland did sidelines of Monday Night Football. He wasn't a journalist. You don't have to necessarily be a journalist to do the reporting as long as you do the job
he
right.
He was doing the job that they hired him to do. He got access to
Yeah, a lot of people
Michael
get on the
Jordan.
Mob for that it, because yeah. he had access to MJ. A lot of people get on him for that.
Man, there's access, and then there's whatever the hell we were just watching.
Like, I know. My dude, Ahmad, though, I just, like, damn, Ahmad. Like, I can't go out like that. You swinging from a tree every chance I, everything I, you just swinging from a tree.
It's hey, like, look.
Like, I get mean, off of him. Like, damn.
Being Michael's friend looks like a pretty good gig. I'm not going to mess that up.
I get all that BFF, but at some point, don't you got some pride?
Key. Some people do, and some people don't. Were you not listening?
I was a pro too. Now, I caught some balls. I was a pro. I made some Pro Bowls. You know, I did good in Minnesota. But damn,
there was a moment in which
my best
to
best.
Just
I can tell you this, man. My best to best friends that go down in hell with me. Okay, they go down with me. It don't look like that. It just doesn't look that way.
Keith, there was a moment I was sitting there and I paused. I had to pause it because I was like, damn, come on, dog.
Man, like, didn't look, it wasn't great.
Man, I sat on the couch last night and in pregame when Gus came back and Gus was leaning up against the wall, coming back, you know, after chemo. And I looked over to the right, and Ahmad is sitting there in the chair. I'm like, are you getting ready to shine his shoes right now?
Yeah, like, it was.
Come on.
I mean,
I know Felicia
it wasn't a great look.
Be like, Lord, have mercy.
It wasn't a great look. We'll talk more about The Last Dance. There's still a lot more to get into. Plus, Aaron Rodgers finally spoke about the draft pick to replace him. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.